welcome back to another episode of Confessions of a Crabby Christian,
a Misfit Media Network production.
I am your host and resident Crabby Christian, Blake, and every week I get to have the coolest conversations with incredible people about all the things most Christians are still not sure we're allowed to talk about. So if you've been looking for a place to land with all your crap, and for someone to just be honest about what it looks like to walk through this Christian life, well, you've come to the right place. Pull up a seat, pop in your headphones and tune out your kids, and come hang out with me and a guest for the authentic conversations that you have been looking for. All right, I am so excited to have Landon Starbuck on the show today. This is a, like, excited, but also this is such a heavy topic. So it's a both and, but this conversation is so necessary. It's one that I've been having online and you and your husband have been really in the trenches of, and now you've put together a documentary, The War on Children. I told you before we started recording, I finished it right before I got on with you. It is incredible, painfully incredible. It is, but so well done. It's so, like, high quality, riveting, keeps you invested, but you're also just in turmoil with the things that are being discussed in this conversation. So welcome to the show. I am so pumped to have you and have this conversation.
Thanks so much for having me, Blake. I've been following you for a while, so I'm really excited to come on your show and get to talk to you.
Yeah. So I want to back up a little bit before we dive into the documentary itself and kind of what you guys cover. I think a lot of people have some kind of origin story with kind of getting to a point of, okay, this has gone far enough. This is bad enough. Like, I need to use my voice in this conversation. What was your point with that? I mean, the war on our children and the trans agenda and the social contagion that it's become.
Yeah, well, I think it's almost like these three things coming together for me. One is my background in Hollywood. I was a Billboard charting singer-songwriter, and I left the industry after witnessing all the exploitation and not wanting to be a part of it anymore. Then I'm also a mom of three. And that also woke me up to my priorities, right? Of protecting them being the most fundamental priority. But then also, I started a nonprofit 2 years ago called Freedom Forever, and we combat child exploitation. And dealing with that every day, those heavy topics, advocating for families, putting out stories, investigative journalism, everything that we do at Freedom Forever, it's a volunteer organization. I don't take a salary. All of those things combined, I'm realizing I'm spending most of my time, and this is time away from my kids too, most of my time just trying to convince people that this is happening. And I'm going, how do we ever get to fixing it if I can't make people realize this is real?
Yeah.
And then seeing other parents give their kids social media at 9 years old. And I'm going, oh man, this train is moving so fast. And so that's really when I was talking, I was like, do I know a director? And I'm like, I'm married to one. So I've been pushing Robbie for a very long time. I'm like, we really need to wake people up. So, and online, the censorship is so bad. People are all living in pick your own adventure, different realities.
Yeah.
And some people, they just don't believe that the sexually explicit drag shows exist because they haven't seen them in their feed.
Yeah.
And then when we try to share them, it gets censored. So it's you have to connect all these dots for people to show them this isn't a conspiracy. These aren't anomalies that are happening. These are all coordinated movements, to essentially remove childhood innocence and destroy the nuclear family so that the state or government powers or whatever you want to call them come and step in and take over.
Yeah. My oldest is 9. And when she turned 8 last year, and there were a couple of kids in her class that had phones. And that was a big moment for me where I don't know what, something clicked for me. And that was when I really joined the conversation online, because I was like, if my child had unfettered access to the internet right now, which she doesn't have access to the internet at all, but if she had this unfettered access and, the internet in her hand, I know what she would be exposed to, because I've seen it, right? Where I'm on the side of the internet where I'm seeing these things be exposed, and her little mind is expected to see those things, process those things, and then just come out the other side fine. That's insanity. It's insanity. And then the craziest part was when I did start talking about it, I was naive and thought that everybody was going to be like, yeah, this is crazy. And then I had people calling me crazy. And I was like, wait, hold on. You use the word conspiracy. You guys think this is some crazy right-wing conspiracy and that this massive jump in gender dysphoria and trans children is, I think their favorite argument is that they just feel safe to come out now. Surely couldn't be the YouTube, couldn't be the books, couldn't be the podcasts, couldn't be the drag queens, for sure.
Right. And what about the adults? Do they feel safe to come out now? Because the rates of adults transitioning are way lower than youth.
Right.
So where are all the dead bodies of the adults that committed suicide because they couldn't be themselves,
right,
and get access to their life-saving, you know, so-called surgeries? Where are all those statistics?
Right.
Or do you stop being trans at a certain age? It's easier than ever. It's more, you get more privileges than ever to be trans today. So, you know, it's remarkable that there's not more adults that are trans.
I've said a few times online that I believe that this is a social contagion, and I get a lot of pushback for that. But at the very beginning of the war on children, y'all talk about the mere exposure effect. Can you explain that a little bit? Because I thought that was such an interesting, you know, like sometimes if you can put science behind it, it makes it make more sense.
Absolutely. The mere exposure effect is a psychological phenomenon. And basically, it's the more you see something, the more your brain will tend to prefer it and even like it. Mm-hmm. So something could be suggested to you. And this is how desensitization works. And even if you want to take it to a darker place, this is how predators desensitize their victims. They expose them to pornography, things that they would never want to look at or feel comfortable with, or certain uncomfortable touches. They slowly desensitize them. So Hollywood has done this to us as you know, mass public is. You know, we would have never seen a film like Cuties or children sexualized or adult child sexual relationships in mainstream movies 20 years ago. But now we see it everywhere, all the time, Netflix. So how did this become normal? It's a slow, you know, progression of suggestibility that gets people to accept things as normal. And that's how we got to a place where 12 and 13 year old girls are getting double mastectomies because they're suffering from gender dysphoria and people are calling it normal and healthcare.
Right.
So these ideas that would have been ludicrous before are now mainstream and normalized.
I know I saw 97% of 13 to 17 year olds are online every day. That's really young. 13 is so young. I think you can, if you're removed from it, you could make that a little bit older in your head. But having a 9 year old and seeing the kids that are just a few grades above her, like these kids are still kids and they're being given adult privileges.
Right. When I think of myself at 13, like I was just a tomboy, braces. Same. I had my childhood innocence still. And there wasn't a pressure to be sexy or anything quite yet. And around that time that Britney Spears and all these, you know, pop stars started, they started pushing that in mainstream America. But before that, you know, you look at pictures of kids in the 90s and you're just like, when they're doing cute little dances, and now it's
girls
like, they look like they're advertising their OnlyFans. Yeah. You know, it's like, what is going on here? You're sexualizing and you're okay with your daughter doing this. It's like, what happened to parents? That's the real, you know, big question I ask myself all the time, because it's like, there's a very innate, strong innate desire, you know, being a mom when you have a baby, like to fiercely protect your child. Like, what has to happen for a mom to like step back and just sever that connection and that protective instinct?
Yeah.
I'm really interested in that, you know, aspect of it is, how do we have so many parents that are fine with their girls playing sports and getting beat up by males in the same team? How do they show up and pay to watch that?
Right.
You know, what happened to parents?
I know I posted a reel not that long ago. I think you actually reposted it. The male basketball player that injured three female players, and the team had to forfeit the game. And you watch him like yank the ball, which it's a standard basketball maneuver, but it's a boy doing it to a girl. And I remember watching it expecting a parent to hit the court, right? Or a coach. And everyone just kind of meanders around. And it was wild to watch this physical manifestation of what you're talking about happen, that it's just complacency. And I do think a lot of it is a desire to be accepted. And y'all talk about that in the documentary a lot as well, as like what's happened from a corporate, like from Wall Street down, this indoctrination that's been handed down, well, that's hitting the adults. And so the adults want to be accepted. And I've said this before online, and it was very unpopular as well. Like, they're almost sacrificing their children on the altar of woke acceptance.
Oh, most definitely. I remember doing an investigative piece, gosh, it was like a year ago, on this, the largest Facebook group of so-called, you know, moms of trans children. And we infiltrated this group to look, you know, at the conversations that were happening. And it was so apparent that these moms are suffering from, you know, modern form of Munchausen by proxy.
Yeah.
They were talking about transing their two-year-olds. They're comparing notes of what surgeon will do surgery at 12 years old. And how do we fly there? And who can pay for it? What insurance plan can I get for my kid to do this? And you look at these pictures of these kids and you're like, they're just children wearing Elsa dresses. Like, this is so sick. But these moms, when they get, they're all in one group and they're feeding each other these delusions, it becomes normalized. And I think that's what's happened, is we look around and we're looking for that one person to stand up. And when they don't, it's a scary thing. It's a defeating feeling of like, well, maybe something's wrong with me. And it's like a mass gaslighting campaign, you know, to survive like this craziness. But it is real. It's very real. And, you know, if people want to read that article and actually see pictures of, you know, them posting about their kids and all of this, it's available at freedomforever.us.
Yeah, I think the other side of that is seeing what happens to the parents who do stand up, who do say that, you know, I mean, there have been multiple cases where children have been taken from families who won't just use their new pronoun, or, you know, what's it, quote unquote, like dead naming them. So I think that parents are up against so much. And my parents and I talk about that a lot. I'm really fortunate to have really incredible parents that are invested in me and invested in my children. And sometimes I get like a little strung out, you know, as we all do. And they are so quick to remind both my husband and I, like, you guys are up against so much more as parents than any generation before you ever has been. Because there's the social pressure, but then there's also the fear of, what is the government gonna do if I don't play this game with my kids?
Right. I mean, I think that it's the hardest time to parent that there's ever been, because there's never been more attacks on children. Mm-hmm. There's never been a greater demand to harm children, ideologically, physically, sexually. So I think that we are up against a lot. And, you know, it's really important that we have the tools to fight back. And that's why I started my nonprofit, because I'm really passionate about waking up parents, but also giving them tools and actions to protect their kids.
Yeah.
It's so important.
Let's talk about schools a little bit. Y'all really got into that. My kids they're at a Christian private school. So we thankfully haven't had to face a lot of that. I'm still pulling them out and homeschooling in the fall, but we're hearing a lot of conversations about the books that are in the libraries and the content that is in the lessons. And there's like DEI.
Right, like SEL, CRT.
Yes, DEI and CRT are the two that are like really popular and getting thrown around. Would you mind just explaining what those two things are really quick, in case there are parents that are listening? They keep hearing that thrown around, but aren't familiar with what's actually being talked about.
Right. Well, DEI stands for diversity, equity, and inclusion. And it's basically just a euphemism for enacting racist policies that teach children to categorize themselves as the two categories, the victim or the oppressor. Mm-hmm. And then see the rest of the world through that lens of, well, this friend might be Hispanic or Black, so they might have less privileges. And therefore, I need to do some sort of struggle session to make this situation favor them. It changes their entire worldview. So whereas before it was about character of judging somebody based on how kind they were and who they were as a person on the inside, now it's about these superficial characteristics of what, you know, marginalized group they belong to, which is just a, you know, it's crazy that I think it's pretty racist to assume that just because somebody's Black or Hispanic that they're somehow oppressed. I think it's pretty racist.
Yeah.
And my husband deals with this all the time, being Cuban American, is he's don't want anyone to talk down to him or tell him that they need to make some special accommodations for him. Like, it's so insulting. You know, that's what CRT does, is that it teaches that. You know, there's SEL, social emotional learning, which sounds really nice, which I bought into many years ago when I put my kid in this fancy private school in California. And it sounded amazing. Like, we're raising global citizens to be kind to everyone and learn social emotional skills, because emotions, it's really important to learn to navigate them and to use them, you know, and apply them in work and the future. It sounds so amazing when they sell us these ideas,
yeah.
But they're just, you know, Trojan horses to get in really sinister agendas.
Hair thinning is complicated. The problem is it's actually so much bigger than just your hair. Like your skin, hair is a reflection of your health, and internal factors can impact the way your hair looks, feels, and grows. Nutrafol's whole body approach multi-targets underlying root causes like stress, hormone fluctuations, and nutrient gaps for visibly thicker, stronger hair. Everyone's root causes of hair thinning are different, so a one-size-fits-all approach to hair growth isn't going to cut it. Nutrafol has multiple formulas that are tailored to give your hair what it needs to grow throughout different stages, like postpartum or menopause, as well as different lifestyles. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding. You can take their hair wellness quiz on Nutrafol.com for a personalized hair health plan based on your specific root causes and take the first step to thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month's subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code Blake. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code Blake. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code Blake.
And I mentioned SEL because the future of where this is going is really children being socially manipulated, engineered emotionally from even in kindergarten on the iPads. There's games engineered to make them make certain decisions emotionally so that they can actually manipulate mindsets,
yeah.
to measure that. Like they will have a social emotional score that follows them through their entire education system. And who gets that data? And for what purpose? So it's really dangerous, that part of it. And, you know, I think the third one was critical race theory, CRT. Yeah, CRT goes right into the DEI.
Yeah, it does. And y'all, I loved that y'all made the point in the documentary, and I've heard you both say this before, like, it's not going to be CRT 101. That's not going to be what's on the curriculum. You know, you hear so many parents like, oh, they don't do DEI. They're not teaching CRT. Maybe not as a class or as a course, but it is embedded and integrated into everything that they're teaching.
Yeah, absolutely. Any evil agenda, like, it doesn't come in and say, oh, I'm this evil agenda. I'm here to destroy your traditional
right.
ways.
They don't announce themselves.
Yes, it's not going to ever happen like that. You have to be discerning. You have to be a critical thinker yourself and as parents to ask the right questions before we drop our kids off into these environments for, gosh, 8+ hours a day with,
right.
And who is the person? Who are they as a person who has this kind of influence on your kid? Because then you find out, you know, they might have an OnlyFans and be an activist on the weekend for these racist causes. So astounding how many people are flocking to education just for the purpose of enacting these agendas
and influencing kids. I mean, that's libs of TikTok. Sometimes I have to like mute her for a minute just to catch my breath because, I mean, just the content that she shares of teachers in the classroom with like preschoolers, and they're talking about what they're teaching these kids and the sneaky, like manipulative ways that they do it. And I've been that parent before that just trustingly put their kid on a bus and sent them to school because that's what you did. You still had some framework of trust with the government. And then what are these kids being exposed to? And think about all the things we've already talked about, DEI, CRT, SEL, and then you add all of the sexual stuff on top of it. It's a deluge. And we wonder why our kids' mental health is in the trash can and why they're making these grand jumps into life-changing decisions. I mean, as you aptly named your documentary, it's because they're living through a war.
Yeah. At every angle.
Every angle.
I mean, medical. You know, they can't go to a doctor now without most mainstream doctors saying, what are your pronouns? How do you feel? Keeping secrets from parents. Teachers keeping secrets from parents. The state keeping secrets from parents, removing children, stealing children. from their families. I mean, this is the war. And if you watch the documentary, not to give too much away, but there's this one story of this mother that brings a lot of people to tears. And it definitely did for me when I was interviewing her, because wars have people die in wars, right, and children are dying. And so this ideology is killing children.
And it's a government-funded war. I mean, you guys talk in the documentary about how many policies and bills the White House has enacted funding these things, funding the research, funding the education. That part is what makes like the back of my head feel like it's going to blow off. Is like, it's bad enough when it's culture. It's bad enough when it's parents being hands-off. And we all, I think, if you have a brain, you're kind of under the, at least a mild understanding that social media has evil aspects to it. But when the government is doubling down on it and helping that side of it, like, can you give like an example? I don't remember exactly off the top of my head, like some of the things that the Biden administration has done.
Right. Well, the Biden administration has fast tracked, you know, government funded trans surgeries, even for kids. Yeah. So this happened in the military, where military families, there was whistleblowers coming forward because their children were being subjected to adult sexually explicit drag shows without their consent or knowledge.
Military families?
Yes. They were doing drag shows in the military for children. And they were also transitioning their children without their knowledge or consent. So they're doing this at the highest levels to the lowest levels, to marginalized communities that are living in poverty, targeting them and putting these teachers strategically, you know, teachers associations, the education boards, these people are put in these positions of power that are completely unqualified and don't actually care about educating children, but they're pushing this DEI agenda or whatever they want to call it, progressive agenda. And that's how this came into the schools, from the government, from the top down. And the education system, you know, this is why we fight for school choice, because this is a pathway out to empower parents to decide what we do with our tax dollars for education for our child. So, yeah, I mean, my husband's actually going to give testimony today in a hearing here in Tennessee, because we're trying to get school choice passed here. And this is the thing they fear the most, because if every parent had the power to use their tax dollars and take their kids out of these failing schools, we wouldn't have a government-empowered education system anymore.
Exactly.
And they know that. And that's why they're fighting so hard.
Well, and that's one thing that, I mean, look, I am not, or have not in the past, been Trump's like hugest fan. I've voted for him the last 8 years. I go back and forth, but he wants to give homeschool parents their tax dollars back. He wants to take it even further. And I am all for that, because it comes down to, and I feel like I've said, the documentary is so good. And I know I keep referencing it because it's just packed. But like, I actually wrote it down that I think it was you that pointed out that there's a quote by Biden where he talks about our children. Our children? No. But that is the mindset. That's the mindset of the government. And unfortunately, that's the mindset of a lot of parents in America, is that the government has and somehow deserves to have a hand in raising our children and educating our children and guiding our children. And you're seeing that, like you just explained, trickle down from government funding to the people that are teaching our children. And it's like, this is what our tax dollars are going towards, is indoctrination and brainwashing.
Right. And you see tons of videos from Libs of TikTok. She exposes this all the time, of these teachers saying, like, when you drop your child off at my door, they're my child. These aren't your children. You don't get to tell me how to teach.
Right.
Oh, okay. So you feel entitled to teach our children lies all day and to break down their sense of identity and confidence in them being born the right, correct way. And this is dangerous, what they're doing. They really do believe it's, and this is a communist mindset, mm-hmm. that the children belong to everyone in the government.
Yep.
And it's super scary to think about that. But, you know, Kamala Harris, even I think Hillary Clinton has echoed that same rhetoric.
It takes a village. Like, she basically originated that. So it's good to remind yourself that this didn't just start in the last 4 years. They've been setting the stage for this conversation for probably 20 years. But doesn't it seem like COVID just kicked it into freaking overdrive?
Totally. I mean, it was like, I study trauma a lot, and, you know, the traumatic events, the impact they have on somebody who's already vulnerable,
Right.
Maybe it's a single mom. Maybe you're struggling with illness. Maybe, you know, you're in between secure housing, whatever it is. You inject this traumatic event where there's, you know, fear, nonstop propaganda. You're in a fight or flight mindset. Your health goes down. Everything goes down. Your natural instincts to protect your young go down. Everything is almost like attacked in your, in yeah. your spiritual and your physical and your emotional mindset. So you're not thinking rationally. And I think that COVID had a very negative psychological effect on a lot of people, that their bodies and minds process it as a traumatic event.
Yeah.
And people are still recovering from that. We still see these, bless their hearts, lost people wearing masks at the grocery store.
Yeah.
That they're never taking them off. The fear was so powerful on them. Mm-hmm. And I think that if we think about COVID like that as this traumatic event, people are still processing. I mean, look at what it did to kids. It convinced parents that their kids should be on computers, and that's totally safe, healthy, and normal. And so now we have most schools with Chromebooks being given to kids. And those yeah. Chromebooks come loaded with porn access and social media and TikTok and Discord.
Mm-hmm.
All of this happened, but I think people were traumatized at the moment that it was happening.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, even as someone who we did the 2 weeks to slow the spread. And then after that, we were like, okay, no, this is dumb. We're going to see our people. And we're really blessed to come from a family of conspiracy theorists who were all like, okay, yeah, no, we'll be fine. If we get sick, we'll figure it out. And you couldn't say that 3 years ago, by the way. I can say that fairly publicly now and not get, you know, torched and pitchforked. But even as a family, like an extended family, that we moved through COVID pretty normally. I'm not going to lie. Like, I live in deep South Louisiana. There were places that had signs that were like, the governor wants you to wear a mask. If you don't wear one, we're assuming you can't. Like, you could go anywhere without a mask. People were still hanging out. Our kids went back to school in the fall. All that to say, it was still traumatizing. It was still scary and difficult to navigate and absolutely impacted the future trajectory of our family. I cannot imagine the people who were living in California and trusted the government and trusted the media, that is psychological warfare, what we went through between the fear of COVID and then the summer of love and then the vaccine debate. I mean, it has. And I always, like, I want to give empathy and compassion for, like, what we have collectively been through, but there's, like, a but. But you can't sacrifice your kids.
Right.
It's still not an excuse to, like, lay down your arms and stop fighting for your kids to have a childhood and to preserve their innocence.
Right.
And I think that's what we've seen a lot of parents do. Mm-hmm. Some of them, because they don't know what to do. And I'm so, like, you guys are such an incredible resource. And you're also, like, leading the way, right? Like, you're not just telling people what to do, you're doing it. And I'm just, it's so incredible and inspiring. But I want to spend kind of like the last little bit of this, like, we've set the stage for how bad things are. This is how things are. This is, like, how they are coming for your kids. What can parents do? Because not every parent has the ability to, like, pull their kid out of public school, or I think we can, like, be agreed. No phones, no social media, no internet. Like, that should be the bare minimum, don't you think?
Absolutely. And this is the part I'm so passionate about, is solutions.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, like, what are you just going to sit in the muck of all this and be a victim? That's exactly what they want.
Right.
And you've lost. You've lost the war for yourself, your future generations, and your children.
Yes.
So get up out of it, dust yourself off, and become a warrior for your children, because there is a war on them. And one of the things that, you know, when we're making this film, there's so much I wanted to, like, inject, but I didn't want it to become like a tutorial of, like, how you parent, how you fix everything. So we had to lay the map of, like, okay, there's a war. It's undeniable, unassailable. Fact check this all day till the cows come home.
Right.
But after you watch this and you're feeling heavy and like, oh my gosh, how do we even begin to turn this around? Well, I wrote something called the Parenting Revolution Manual. And it covers every aspect of this war and what parents can do, or really anyone that cares about your children in your life, aunts, uncles, anyone that cares, to stop this. And it gives you tools and resources and facts. So whatever you need to do to make those decisions to protect your kids, you can. But it's not all about fighting what's bad and wrong.
Yeah.
It's about like who we want to be as parents, reclaiming our authority.
In Puerto Rico, we call ourselves Boricua. We are proud, passionate, and full of life. On our island, adventure finds you. Strangers aren't strangers for long. The size of the audience doesn't change the beauty of the music. And we celebrate every last ray of sun. Live Boricua.
And replacing all this negative stuff that is not good for our kids, that is not feeding our families or feeding us spiritually, because we have such spiritually starved children. It's not just all the bad things happening. It's like they need an infilling of a true knowing of who they are. They're God's precious children. There's nothing wrong with them, that it's normal to go through teen hormones and changes, but you'll be there with them.
Yes.
The presence of parents is so important. And kids are stuck in public schools or situations. I know there's situations out there. I work with moms like this all the time, or even the dad wants them in the school, or the dad gives them a phone and it's just difficult. Yeah. Just make a plan. Start with making a plan, how to get them out of the situation, how to address the situations happening, how to fight the school. There's things that everyone can do no matter what their situation is. And like you said, non-negotiables. You know, what age is it okay for my kid to have a smartphone? Well, what age are you okay with your kid having access to pornography and predators having access to your child?
Yeah.
That's the question you have to answer as a parent. And there's plenty of stories out there for parents to educate themselves, but they have to answer that question.
Yeah.
We're in charge of what happens to our kids. So, you know, there's great resources because people say, well, I have to stay connected with my kid. Great. Well, there's the Trumi phone. We have a discount, $50 off for you. There's so many resources available, again, at my website, freedomforever.us. That's my nonprofit. And so we're constantly updating it, making sure that parents have the best resources. And that manual I told you about is absolutely free. So you just subscribe and it gets sent to your inbox.
Yeah. And we'll link to that in the show notes, because I think that that is what so many parents are looking for. You know, we talked earlier about, okay, no generation of parents has been up against what we are up against. We can acknowledge that. And that is very real. But like you said, you can't just stay there. You can't just, because it would be really easy to let overwhelm and fear and even maybe a degree of nothing I'm going to do is going to help or fix it, make you just sit down and stay silent. And look, I understand that not every, I have a largely female listener base. I understand that not every mother, every woman out there is hardwired for war, right? Like, we don't all wake up in the morning ready to, like, you know, William Wallace our way through the day. I understand that. You don't need to fight for other people's children, but at least fight for your own, right? I think that there are plenty of people out there like yourself and myself and Robbie and plenty of other voices that want to fight for all of the kids. If that is not your plight, at least fight for yours. And that requires you to, like, tune in, be aware of what is even potentially out there. These things don't happen to every single kid. Every single kid doesn't end up turning into a trans child or being groomed by a predator, but they could.
Mm-hmm.
And it is actually almost completely avoidable.
Yes, 100%. We say that all the time. I mean, sexual abuse is preventable. Physical, all of these things, all these threats are preventable.
Right.
We don't live in a fully communist country yet. We still have choices.
Right.
You know, and we have to fight for those because they'll disappear if we don't. But we have the right to homeschool. We have the right to reject, you know, medical mandates. We have the right to live in certain states that allow us more freedoms than others.
Yeah.
You know, so we have so many choices. It's not just fear-based parenting. It's just fear-based adulting. Every decision is being made out of fear.
Yeah.
You know, well, if I don't have my kid at this school, you know, they won't go to college. What? So they can become a social justice warrior with blue hair that hates you and your values. You really have to think long-term about the ramifications of these decisions.
Right.
And really invest in our children. I mean, I think Jordan Peterson said this and it brought me to tears, but there's nobody more for you that wants a closer relationship with you, that loves you, you know, unconditionally, than your children.
Mm.
And if they had it their way, they'd want to be with you all the time. They'd want to go sharing experiences and learning together. And I think that that's really what's going to rebuild that connection that we've lost with our kids, yeah, is reminding ourselves, like, life doesn't get better than that.
Right.
And it's as good as your connection to your child and your family is as strong as a parent's connection to their children.
Absolutely. And look, like, that is a journey that I have been on for the last 3 to 4 years. I was the parent that when schools closed in, oh gosh, was it almost exactly 4 years ago? It was like beginning of March, wasn't it? 2020? When the schools closed,
I think so.
I was a parent that was like, oh my God, what are we going to do? I was working. I was not mentally in a space to have my kids with me all the time. I have walked that road of getting to a place where, you know, we're finishing out this school year and bringing our kids home, because I do believe that that is ultimately what is best for our children. Will it require some degree of sacrifice on my part? Sure. Isn't that kind of the point? Isn't motherhood the most sacrificial role that we get to step into? And at the end of the day, what you just said is 100% accurate. I was a little nervous. This is not going to be a homeschool podcast, but like broaching that topic with them. Once we told them that they were going to like come home and learn from home, you would have thought we took them to Disney World every day for the last 6 months. I mean, they are so stoked. And that inspires something in me as well. What you just said is, and or what Peterson said is so accurate. Like, they want us. They want us. They want connection with us. They want to learn from us and with us. And those of us who are parents who love God and love Jesus have the opportunity to stand in direct opposition to what culture is trying to teach our kids and say, no, like, you are good the way that God made you. Like, he doesn't make mistakes. No amount of praise from either side is going to make you feel as complete as a relationship with God. It's like, we get to do that with our kids. And I think that is, if nothing else, like, that's the beginning of how you fight for your kids is, and I don't even necessarily mean like pulling them in homeschooling. I mean, standing in front of culture and going like, no, don't look that way. Look this way. Like, keep your eyes on Jesus.
Right. And I would say every parent should homeschool. And that doesn't mean that every kid has to come home and homeschool. But every parent should be their child's primary, first and foremost, educator on life.
Yes.
On lessons, on values, on making sure that that disgusting stuff from the outside world doesn't come into your home and into their mind and into their souls.
Yeah.
And so if a parent like doesn't recognize that's their responsibility to be their child's educator, that's where we have to start. It's, yeah. No, it is your responsibility. It's not the teacher's job. It's not anybody else's to raise a human being.
Right.
They're learning skill sets, you know, at school, hopefully. But no, that's not their job, actually. It's our job.
Right. I mean, it really is so crazy to be, I can put myself back in that mindset from 5 years ago where you're just going through the motions and you're sending your kids to school to be educated. And then when they come home, you're just like trying to put together a life out of the little amount of time that you have. And if you like need to continue to send your kids to school, whatever the situation is, I think that's what you just said is such an incredible mindset to adopt of like, no, our time when we are home, if nothing else, viewing it as a filter, like, let's filter through what you just were exposed to, taught, et cetera. Like, let's put that through a filter of the Bible, because if nothing else, you want to send out kids that can go, oh no, that's not true. Right.
Yeah.
At some point be able to see it themselves, right? That you show it to them enough that they can see what's a lie and what's the truth.
Absolutely. And I love like the stereotype that especially Christian or homeschool moms are like sheltering our kids. Now, we're insulating them from evil. We're not sheltering them. And there's a big difference. You know, my children, I have a 15-year-old, an 11-year-old, and a 7-year-old. And we talk to them about every issue that they're going to see and deal with in the real life.
Yep.
And it's sad that I have to talk to my 7-year-old about what are pronouns and transgender issues and all these things. But I want her to know the truth so that nobody in the world can come and inject something contrary to the truth and put those seeds in her mind.
Yes.
And she's going to hear those things because sadly, it's become normalized and everywhere. And it's important that we teach our kids like everything, body safety, you know, how to come to us and talk to us if they do see porn, because they will see porn at some point.
Right.
If they even go to a neighbor's house for a moment. I mean, these things happen. the kid has a smartphone, they pull it up.
Yep.
You know, so our kids, we have to equip them and prepare them to be warriors. They're not warriors yet, but to prepare them before we go let them out in the woods just to survive. And so we're giving them digital self-defense skills. You know, my 15-year-old does not have social media, and she will not have it until she's 16, but she knows how social media works. Mm-hmm. She gets on it with me. I show her, I teach her about the predatory algorithms. I show her examples of grooming. I show her how even advertising, mm-hmm. you know, and likes and things. And I'm going to say, what happens? Do you think if I post this picture, I'll get more likes than this one? You know, we talk about these things so that when she's doing that herself, she has all of this knowledge and she's not going into it as, you know, this sponge and victim for social media to just grab a hold of them. And I think that's a really big mistake parents make isn't just waiting for the right age, but the time from, you know, when they're 10 years old to 16, walking them through that and showing them things, and showing them and talking about what's happening in the real world and why we believe what we believe. So, I mean, we are always having those in-depth conversations in our house and in our car and debates and all of that good stuff. So we enjoy it.
Yeah. I think that's so wise, because I think a lot of parents think we're doing the right thing by holding off, and you are, but then we can't just toss our kids into the deep end. I've had a few people since talking about homeschooling online say things along those lines of like socialization or protecting them or wrapping them in bubble wrap. And I'm like, first of all, they're 7 and 9. They should still be bubble wrapped a little bit. Like, let's be honest. They should be outside with dirty knees and playing with dolls, first of all. But bringing them home allows us to be the ultimate influence in their lives. And yes, insulate them from things that they don't need to be exposed to, and ensure that they are exposed to them on an appropriate timeline. Like, yeah, these things are a part of life. These things are a part of the world. They're going to, at some point, be exposed to porn, exposed to gender ideology, exposed to DEI and CRT and all those kinds of things. Do you not want them to be exposed to it? And I kind of said this earlier, be able to look at it and go, that's not God's design. That's not what God intended us for or how he intended us to live.
100%.
Yeah, I am going to insulate my kids. It's not the criticism you think it is.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's funny. It's like, yeah, we are supposed to protect our kids. Yes.
Right, exactly. And it's like, I was talking to a friend about it the other day, and she was saying, I'm waiting for people to kind of call it indoctrination, what we're doing. And I was like, so it's okay if they do it, they can indoctrinate my kid, but I can't indoctrinate my kid. And also, it's not indoctrination. It's giving them critical thinking skills. It's showing them right from wrong. If you want to call it indoctrination, if that makes you feel better, whatever.
Right. You know, they have been. I mean, they've been going after homeschool parents for a long time and freedoms. They're always under attack. I mean, even in states where you'd think they'd be pretty secure.
Yeah.
There's still seemingly every legislative session, some bill pops up to try to add more red tape for parents and more things they have to do as homeschool parents.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, the most dangerous thing I think that we have to look out for is like they've redefined these terms, safe and abuse. And as long as they can redefine terms, the laws can stay the same, but the ramifications are going to be really scary.
Yeah.
And so for them, they think it's abusive in some places for a parent to not put their kid in a school. They think that's abuse, and they will call that abuse and use that word as abuse, or to not use the pronouns like you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
And so what happens if you are abusing your child? Well, that gives the government permission to come take your child.
Right.
Because they're not getting an education or they're not getting affirmed. So that's what they've done. They've linguistically manipulated our existing laws to enact that agenda.
Yeah.
It's so much even more than just educating our kids and, you know, the indoctrination. It's really about their safety, because in some states you could lose your child.
Which is insane, right? I mean, like, you drive 30 minutes up the road from where I am, and there are kids that actually are in unsafe situations. What if we use that energy and those finances to give those kids a better shot? And you don't worry about the ones who have loving parents that just serve a different God than you. Because at the end of the day, like, this is a religious war, and it's good versus evil. And it is evil to expose children to the things that they're being exposed to. It is evil to say that they should cut off body parts in order to feel better and therefore change their entire lives and their ability to function. Like, that's evil. We're on the side of good.
Yeah. And I think it's also evil to participate in that lie, even if we're not the ones transing our kids.
Yeah.
If we're partnering with the lie, that's not compassionate. It's not loving. It's not being truthful over a situation or speaking truth to that person in life and love over that person struggling.
Yeah.
And so I see a big problem with so many parents just being like, well, I'm just going to use their pronouns. It's respectful, but it doesn't mean I want kids to have surgeries. And but you are, you're participating in that entire agenda because you have to use whatever pronoun somebody comes up with.
Right.
So, and then that also is a license for them to come into women's spaces.
In Puerto Rico, we call ourselves Boricua. We are proud, passionate, and full of life. On our island, adventure finds you. Strangers aren't strangers for long. The size of the audience doesn't change the beauty of the music. And we celebrate every last ray of sun. Live Boricua.
So this affects everyone. It does not affect just people who are having children with gender dysphoria or who want their children to be trans or whatever it is. I think more parents need to realize, like, when we partner with a lie, we are complicit in that evil.
Absolutely. And it's the first domino, right? You knock down that first domino, you're taking part. And also, once you've conceded a little bit of ground, I mean, it's you give a mouse a cookie, right?
Yes.
You concede on pronouns. I had this conversation with somebody not that long ago that was asking about pastors having pronouns in their bio. And I was like, I don't agree with it because there's scripture that says, let your yes be a yes and your no be a no. And like, my belief is that if I have to explain my pronouns to you, we have a really big problem.
Right.
And I think I actually used that almost the same language of like, you are complicit in a lie.
Mm-hmm.
You're playing the game. And so I understand. I had a pastor on my show who is gender affirming and who uses pronouns because he thinks it's loving. And I pushed back even in the episode and was like, but don't you kind of feel like you're lying to people? And he was kind of like, eh. Yeah, he was a little
right.
Like we got a little stuck there. But I do think that there's scripture that says like, take no part in works of darkness.
Yes. Yeah.
And like, I don't even want to play with that. So like, I'm not going to put my pronouns in my bio. And I've even gone, like, I'm not going to play the game with you. You know,
right.
A lot of the time I'll do my best to avoid the language if I can and use like their name in place of pronouns. But yeah, I think once you step foot into that world, it's like it'll suck you in so fast because it's such a monster that's growing so fast right now.
Right. And forced speech is the end of free speech. And that's exactly what they're trying to do. I mean, a Biden official in the military just came out and said, you know, use pronouns in your bio. And schools are starting to force kids to do that. You know, once you are forcing compelling lies,
right,
you know, in speech, you are forcing us to also violate, you know, our religion, our religious freedoms, you know, because now we have to participate in somebody else's lie.
Yeah.
And say that it's saying that there's two genders is wrong, is saying, well, everything in the Bible is wrong too.
Right.
So I can't have my Bible. I can't practice my faith out in the United States of America because it's offensive and illegal.
Right.
That's where we're headed here because everything in the Bible is going to be illegal.
Right. Absolutely. Well, obviously we could talk about this for like a whole nother hour, but instead take those 2 hours and 20 minutes, go watch The War on Children. thewaronchildren.com. I can be your promo pitch for it because I just loved it and watched it. And I want to like sit down and watch it with my husband again, because I think, like I said at the beginning, even as someone who knows what is going on and is in that world a little bit, there's just something about watching it all compiled in one place, really well done. That is, it's nice to have something that you can be like, oh no, go watch this.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, you don't believe me? Here you go.
Mm-hmm.
$12. That's less than you'll spend at Starbucks this week. Go watch this documentary and just like know what you're up against. And then I love that you've already have resources created for like, once you are aware of what's going on, now here's how you can go to war on behalf of your children. So I know that I've gushed this entire interview, but I'm just like such a fan. So thankful. Y'all are doing such important work. I'm so thankful to get to share my platform with you on like a just a small degree.
Well, thank you so much for doing that. And, you know, it means so much to Robbie and I and everyone on the crew who worked on this film, because at the time, like, there was so much spiritual warfare going on.
Oh, gosh.
To get this out, I mean, people wouldn't believe half the stories we would tell them about, like, just this process of getting this. And we're just really, it's cool to see what God has done with this film. We're just a small independent group putting this out. And to see over 50 million people download this film is just mind-blowing.
Didn't Elon Musk, like, retweet it?
Yes, yeah. We're like, what?
So cool.
I mean, it was so cool. And so many more people have seeing messages like, oh, I had no idea. Shame on me for not paying attention, you know, like, and I'm like, how do people just not know any of this is happening? You know, but like you said, you put it all together. I think that it's also relieving for some people that are like, I'm not crazy. This
right.
It's an agenda.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, I think, very vindicating for a lot of people that have faced persecution or whatever at their jobs and in the social circles of like them being made to feel like a pariah for standing up for truth.
Yeah.
I think people will watch this and go, oh my gosh, this is right.
No, I agree. I think it'll be vindicating. It'll be eye-opening. I think even if you know what's going on, you have no idea to the degree and the, you know, the tripart takedown and how far this has gone. It's just, go watch the documentary. It's linked in the show notes. Go watch it right now and make sure you're following Landon and Robbie. We talked before we started recording. I did not put you two together, but now that I put you two together, I'm like, oh my gosh, talk about a force of nature, the two of you. So I just love you guys so much. Thank you so much for your time coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Blake. You're wonderful. I love following you. And thank you so much for lending your platform to this.
All right, that's it for this week. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Crappy Christian Podcast. And hey, by the way, if you super loved it, can you go leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening? That'd be awesome. All right, see you next week.